Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, but I'm party.
And Jake Latondras.
And bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur on this Tuesday afternoon. And, of course, it's Tuesday. We're back on our normal schedule. And joining me on Tuesday, Mr. Justin Martin. Martin, you finally got out of the woods.
I did, dadgummit. That's the only problem with us being back on a normal schedule is, well, I guess everybody knows that means that it's over. You know? And I tell you what, for the first time in a really, 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 maybe ever, I didn't mind seeing it go. I'll just be honest. I just didn't have the normal angst and like, God, one more day. I was like, oh, thank God, it's over. You know, it was kind of just like, and of course I say that and I wake up this morning and it's 28 degrees and a 20 mile an hour north wind and not a cloud in the sky, and I'm like, oh, just to be standing back in them woods one more time. Oh, if there was ever a day for mallard duck killing, boy, it was today. Golly. Whew. Oh, well.
I'm going to say that there's going to be a big push with this polar vortex, as they're calling it, down the flyway this week. Youth season should be unbelievable this weekend.
It should be. Oh, yeah. And I hope there's some people out there that are going to be taking some kids this weekend. I actually had planned on doing it, and I forgot. I didn't realize that I speak at a wild game dinner this Friday night down in South Louisiana. So I'm actually going to miss my opportunity to take the kids that I normally take. I took them already once at the beginning of the season for Youth Day, and I sure was hoping to get to go kick some water one more time with some kids and see if we could kill some mallards or, you know, have a little fun. But unfortunately, I'm going to miss it. But you know what? If I had to miss it, I'd just soon it being share my testimony and what God's done for me. So they both carry their merit on our future. So I'm happy to miss it for that cause. That's for sure.
Now, hey, let me say this. I want to open up with saying this. Thank you for being a part of the future video series or video contest. I appreciate you being a kind of a sponsor, you and Duck Commander, being a part of that, giving away some calls to some kids that were winners in the contest. Now, I don't try to use my friendships or anything in that form or fashion, but you know, you stepped up to play case out. You know, I'll say this, there were multiple people that stepped to the plate, but you were one of them and said, hey, I want to be a part of this. Here's some calls to give to the kids, and I appreciate that. And I know everybody does.
Yeah, that's my pleasure, man. That's something that's near and dear to me because you know, my parents, we've discussed this, but my parents didn't duck hunt, neither did my grandparents. So it took somebody, you know, taking a chance on a kid like me to take me. And that's just what I want to do. I want to encourage these kids to stick with it and, you know, to give it a whirl and, you know, continue to grow our stuff, you know, as coming back in, you know, we just come back from a week at SHOT Show out in Vegas and, I mean, you get to talk to people from all around the industry and hear different things, and the you know, the overwhelming deal is still the deal. Duck hunting is just, it's not growing. You know, it's kind of staying level or a slight decrease, but there's no significant increase. So whatever we can do to help add one or two or three or four more hunters, we're going to do, you know, everything that we can to help try to pull that off.
Well, before we jump into the topic at hand, did you bring the SHOT Show crud home with you?
Oh, I didn't. I actually made it this year without getting sick or anything. I tell you, I think I figured it out. I think I have finally got it. It's you go hunting the morning before you leave. You go kill you a full limit. You get on an airplane. You go to Vegas. Once you land, you go eat dinner, and you're in bed before 7 p.m. the first night. That's what you do. Now, the side effect to that is you wake up at 2:15 a.m. and step out of your bed ready to go duck hunting, only to realize you're in a hotel room in Las Vegas. Because my body gets a clock programmed in it, and I woke up thinking I was still at home ready to go duck hunting. My alarm didn't go off. I don't have to set an alarm after about 10 days into duck season. But I just stepped out of bed, like sat on the bed like I do at my house, scratched my head, you know, opened my eyes, looked around, was like, oh, I'm not at home. Never mind. You know, but, and contrary to popular belief, at 2:15 in the morning in Vegas, there is nothing to do. Nothing. I even put on my shorts and my shoes. I was going to go jump on the elliptical, get a little light workout in or something, you know. No, gym's closed. They don't want you in there at 2 p.m. or 2 a.m. I guess they want you spending money elsewhere, spending time elsewhere. So, you know, for somebody like me, there ain't nothing to do in Vegas at 2:15 in the morning other than go get back, lay in the bed and watch Fox News or, you know, whatever you can find on TV at that time.
You know, with you guys and having a booth like that, and I know that's a kind of a distribution show to buyers. It's not really a consumer show, but, you know, there still has to be kind of a pop feel to the Duck Commander booth. You know, with Duck Dynasty still fresh on their minds, I'm sure you still have just a ton of people stop by the booth for pictures, autographs, whatever it may be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because what you get a lot there is actually people from overseas, where the show is still, you know, just being watched in a lot of cases. You know, I think our two biggest orders for the week came from Denmark and Italy. So
wow.
You know, so then you're trying to, you know, in my case, a redneck trying to speak extremely broken English to some people that are wanting to buy your product and stock it in their stores, and I'm like, good, you know, I mean, I have no idea, you know, I'm just like. And then what was so funny is the ones from Italy, they would pick it up and they'd just, you know, pick up a duck call and go, and they'd look at each other and smile and nod and thumbs up and write an order number out beside it. It was so fun. They wouldn't do like, it was just, no, yeah, good, good. And they'd just write numbers out beside it. I'm like, oh man, glad y'all enjoyed it. That end of it is very entertaining to myself, at least, you know. It's but yeah, they're still, you know, and people, what you get is you get these dealers and you know, big stores and little stores and all that come out there, and you know, a lot of them are family businesses, so they bring their kids and grandkids, and what you end up doing is you see a lot of kids, a lot of grandkids, and take pictures with them and all that kind of good stuff. And one thing we do is we give away hats to people, just, you know, kind of marketing, whatever you want to call it, but we give people hats and sign them, and that way the kids get something cool to take home from SHOT Show. So
let's talk about duck hunting for a minute. Change directions real quick. Weird duck season. There are a ton of people that's listening to this podcast that want to, if they, you know, had you in front of them, you know, we're having a conversation, they would want to know, hey, Martin, what was the deal? What do you think had the most negative effects on why duck season was the way it was. Because overall, there were some people that had great seasons. I think that number's limited, but overall, I think the most had a difficult season this year. What do you think caused that?
Well, let's see. I'm going to try to be as diplomatic as I possibly can on that. While also, I mean, if I've got to narrow it down to one thing, I'm going to say it was a lack of weather. With that being said, we still got cold fronts. We still got rain. We still filled up the river bottoms. We still did all this. The biggest difference was the direction of those said fronts. They were all almost due west to east, which does nothing to encourage a migration. As far as, all these birds are, most of them are from our north. So we need what we just got with what we call a straight downer, where it comes out of the Arctic and just comes basically almost north-south. Now, it's always going to go a little northwest-southeast, but these this year, because of, whichever one it is out there in the ocean, El Nino, La Nina, whatever the Spanish is out there, the way it had the jet stream pushed, you just look at it, and there was no way for a front to come from our north and come straight down. It had to start up in Washington and essentially just come straight across. So I've seen those years before. The difference is this year it held on until about right now. Generally, that trend breaks right around New Year's, whatever reason, that big ridge stayed there. So generally, we've had these years where November and December were pretty pitiful, and then that ridge breaks in the jet stream, and it moves where it'll allow these fronts to come straight down. And once we get to January, you can have one of the best Januaries of your life, and that's what we didn't have this time. That's what we didn't get. We didn't get a break in that ridge until this past week. So, that you can call it what you want to. It's just really a matter of unfortunate things. It's not it's nothing we could have done differently, I don't think. And it's not solved by moving the season back a week. I think that's a giant misnomer. I think it's a terrible idea. I, for one, am not for hunting ducks in February, except for this one weekend for kids. Because I've studied them all through college, I've read the research on what that does to pair bonds and, all the good stuff. All of what we need them to do right now, which is return, nest, breed, and get back down here in a timely fashion, So, just simply moving the season back, I don't think helps anything either. So, we've tried it in Louisiana, we've tried it with teal season. Everybody always said, hey, if we could just hunt till September 30th, well, we've done it the last 2 years, and teal season has been not very good here. So, I mean, it's not always as simple as just moving it back, and hey, that gives us more time, and it's bound to be good, So, but if you're, the one factor to me is that east or the west-east weather pattern that we had. Couple that with a lot of rain in late October and harvest time, which allowed crops to stay in the fields longer and farmers not able to get them out and, stuff like that. You just had the perfect storm to be a really good year to be a duck and a really poor year to be a hunter. But you know what? In the grand scheme of things, we generally win in the end. So I'm not too mad that the Ducks won this time. I mean, it was a little frustrating. And, I say they won. I had a below average year. But once I put the pen to paper on everything, it wasn't as terrible as it felt. I'll say that. So, I'll also say this is the least amount I ever hunted, period. Since I've had this job, especially, and even probably prior to college, this was the least amount of duck hunting I went on. But you grow older, you grow wiser. And when I'd wake up and it'd be pouring down rain, rather than going and getting soaking wet and getting all my junk wet, I just stayed at the house. So,
Oh, let me ask you this. Let me throw you a curveball. Comes the old slider.
All right.
Do you think there's a problem in the numbers? Let me say this.
Okay.
Doing these migration reports across the United States, from Nebraska to California, to all the way back across to Tennessee, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and all the way up the Mississippi Flyway, not one single person that I talked to had seen or had large concentrations of ducks anywhere around them that, you know, we've seen in the past.
Yeah.
I'd say this. I was in Oklahoma the last week of the season. That's the hardest I've ever worked to kill birds. And usually that is one of those, woohoo, and you shoot.
Sit back, turn your head around and hold on, right?
Exactly.
The scientist in me has to give them the benefit of the doubt that the numbers that they produce for us is as correct as they can reasonably be. The small business capitalist man in me also figures out that there can be some shades of gray in those numbers to help drive whatever narrative they're wanting to tell also.
Let's go back to September, October. Let's mm-hmm. go back in time a little bit, you know, because our migration report started in Canada. And in talking to different guides that were working in Canada, this is the most they ever, some scouts, they have scouts, most of these guys that work, and that's all they do is drive and scout. Because usually if you're a guide in Canada, you have hundreds of thousands of acres, you know, square miles that you hunt. And some of these guys are averaging 300 to 400 miles a day to find a large enough concentration of birds that the guide could get on the next day.
Mm-hmm.
In years past, you maybe drove 50 to 100 miles to find your birds.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that's the one that bugs me. And then on top of that, everybody says, hey, I know I'm going to give you a two-part question here. You know, well, the birds didn't make it. They're going to have a less flight. Healthier birds going to produce more ducks. Here's the second problem we're running into this spring. Canada's a dust bowl right now. Barring miracle blizzard coming through, 3 to 6 feet of snow, we're in trouble in the pothole region of Canada. Big time.
Yep, I agree with that assessment for sure. From all the people that I've talked to up there about the overall lack of snow or snow cover and rainfall, and you know, I think too, you want to think, well, there weren't many that made it, so that'll be a good hatch. And the problem with that is there's going to be that much less available food for the ones that are returning because those have sat there and ate it out. So I don't think that it makes for an overall healthier duck population when they, I think the good Lord designed these things to go stage by stage by stage by stage, not, and then have to turn around and go back on that stage so that they never really wipe an area out. You know what I'm saying? Like, when they return, that water is melted and there's still food there. There's still the native stuff. There's still insects. It's getting replenished and all of that. So I'm going to be supremely interested once they release pond counts and stuff like that. And just to see what they do, you know, I can tell you in my best guess of keeping numbers and records and stuff of what I'm seeing is that green wing teal seem to be pretty stable in their population. Pintails, regardless of what they say, I continue to kill the same amount of pintails a year, whether we can kill one or two, it seems like. So,
I talked to you one time, you text me, man, I'm walking out with the tree. I guess it was a few of y'all hunting. And you said, man, most pintail I've seen in a while.
Oh, we whooped on them things late in the year. Golly, it was fun killing them big old bull sprigs. Woo, Lord. They're probably my favorite. I mean, I just to sit and watch and, you know, oh, we worked on them. And I saw a bunch of them this year. Now, I know that that's a little bit of an anomaly. You always see them, but to actually see them over the decoys this year, I was like, golly, man, what's up with this? And then to know that next year we're going down to one and all that kind of good stuff. But I'm just saying, if I look at my harvest trends, you know, I'm like, yeah, man, they seem to be fine. The concerning ones to me, and I think what should be, as a southern hunter, the ones that are kind of a barometer on how things are, is that gadwalls seem to continue to be down.
Exactly.
Mallards continue to be down. I'm just saying in a harvest rate, and shovelers
right.
continue to be down. And those bother me for a number of reasons. You know, gadwall, you know, you ask most southern hunters, the gadwall in effect has replaced the mallard as your big duck for a lot of times, you know, I mean, you know, gadwalls are pretty habitat specific, and the fact that they use grain fields and all that, but, you know, my experience has been they prefer old cypress brakes with coontail moss and grass shrimp in them.
That's right.
Is where they seem to really thrive. So that concerns me on, is that habitat not available for them? Are they, you know, is runoff playing a part of this? Is a reduced water quality throughout the flyway in those places playing a role in this? You know, now shovelers could just be an anomaly for this year. This is actually the first year that I'll tell you, I'm not, let me think of the right way to say this. I got no problem with shooting shovelers. I by no means target them per se. And
target.
If we've already
That's
got,
right.
you know, 12 or 15 ducks for the morning, I'm going to lay off the shovelers because why? I mean, I'm not a game hog anymore, you know, but if it's slow and, you know, I got boys that need to fire their weapon and stuff, I mean, it's fair game on them. And for us to only have killed 27 of them this year total, that bothers me a little bit, you know. I mean, that really, I start wondering, because the reason I say that is they use a lot of the same habitats that your mallard use on their ways back and forth. So then I'm like, oh boy, you know, I'm like, what is happening here? So, I mean, other than flooded timber, but I'm saying the ag fields and stuff like that, shovelers love a rice field just like a mallard drake does. So, you know, I start kind of getting a little concerned, and I'll tell you the biggest concern over this season was the overall lack of juvenile birds that I harvested, which, you know, means it's that fewer ducks going back up there to breed. I just didn't kill many juveniles of anything, you know, and I'm the consummate nerd. When I kill one, I like to look at him and inspect his feathers and figure out if he's hatching year or if he's an older bird or, you know, whatnot. And I just didn't kill many juvenile birds. So, now, whether that's a product of them getting shot above us, I don't know. But, you know, according to everybody here, not many people up above us had a very good year either. So I don't think that's it. So I'm not sure if something didn't happen in late summer that we don't know about or may not be able to be traced, or if brood survival was way down for whatever reason, for, you know, the potholes kind of drying up and being concentrated and predators and, you know, this, that, the other. But these things are going to, we're going to not know the full extent of this story, I don't think, for a couple of more years, you know.
Well, I'm in full agreement on two out of the three that you named, and that's shovelers
right.
and gadwalls. Mallards are almost turning into the Canada geese of the 1970s, 80s, and 90s.
Yeah.
They're becoming hardier and hardier, and it seems like they're just sticking a little further north. But on top of that, when you talk about 93 or 97 million acres of no-till corn across the Midwest,
mm-hmm.
they can get lost real quick.
Yeah, they got the attention span of a flea anyway, so, you know.
I am in 100% agreement with you on the gadwall and the shoveler. Tell me somebody
yeah.
that killed a lot of shovelers this year. I don't know of anybody.
I didn't
really
see a bunch of them until this last weekend. Yeah. I mean, I saw this last weekend, I saw a bunch of shovelers. And, of course, we were killing other ducks, so there wasn't no reason to kill them. But I'm saying, you know, we could have killed 7 or 8 each day, and we didn't do it. But, you know, I did see high bunches of shovelers flying, and I hadn't seen that all year. So, you know, was that a delay thing? Was it, who knows? You know, this year is just going to go down as one of them that leaves everybody, I think, scratching their head on, you know, what. And I think if we all try to put it down to one factor, then we're really limiting ourselves and limiting what, you know, what the ducks can and can't do and what the good Lord, you know, can and can't do for them and everything, you know, around there. So it was one of the years, I mean, I guess you could say it was the perfect storm for North Missouri and up to just absolutely hammer them. And for us boys in the South to sit down here and gripe and complain and, you know, come up with all kind of conspiracy theories that, you know, the referees that blew the Saints game were in control of the duck season, that also, you know, kind of that whole deal. You know, you start trying to tie them all in together and, you know, the reason that's why Anthony Davis is leaving to go to the Lakers. You know, they think it all ties in together to, you know, spurn everybody in Louisiana. Me, I'm just like, boy, that's a bad deal. You know, let's roll.
The gadwall is the one that everything that you said, I believe to be factual about the gadwall. Majority of the time, they're sitting in your cypress breaks, love coontail. They're photo migrators. Am I wrong so far?
No,
photo period migrators. And, you know, I know that they, in the opening in November, they killed a good many gadwall in South Louisiana. But after that, I didn't see a lot of pictures with a ton of gadwall. I was seeing pictures with a ton of blue wings.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, I'll tell you this too, Rocky, and Bradley Ramsey can attest to this. One of our buddies has got one of the hottest gadwall holes in the country. And, I never set foot in it because there were never enough ducks to hunt it. You know, I never put my boots in it because there just wasn't ever enough to go out there and have some fun with. And, you know, part of that was, and I'm going to wear, you know, on our end, wear some of the blame on that because we let the water get too low last year. And, the lily pads and the hyacinth got up and shaded out a lot of the coontail, but there was still enough coontail in there to hold a decent number of birds. But for whatever reason, they just didn't get to it, and they didn't get here necessarily. I just never saw a big concentration of them. So, you know, this year, I'll say this.
This Sunday, is the spot that y'all let them build up to about 2,000 or 3,000 before you go shoot it, right?
Well, yeah. And I mean, this year we would have settled for 300 or 400.
Yeah. That's what he was saying last week.
You know, and they shot them Saturday one time. Three of them went in there, and they shot 15. And, you know, there was about 200, 250 on it whenever they did that. And, you know, so, but they were just never there. So that, you know, that it just, those kind of things are what I find concerning when I look to the future.
Here's a big misconception about, and you can tell everybody this, Martin, but a gadwall is, and Bradley and I have talked about this numerous times, they're harder to ban because it's hard to get them in grain.
They don't take the bait well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've seen things being thrown around that even the gadwall are being held up by the corn. Well, they may be being held up by the corn, but they're using it for a shelter. They're not in there probably feeding on your corn.
No, they're not. They don't. Yeah, they prefer. They're mostly a vegetarian. I mean, they eat grain. I've seen them actually, out of all the grain, tend to prefer soybean fields over any other one, really and truly.
Yeah,
I think that has to do with a lot of the green leaves that are left after soybeans are cut, and they get a little water put back on them, and they'll sprout. And I'm not so sure they're not in there eating the leaves more than they are the actual beans. You know, but Yeah, they're not a big. I mean, you kill. Well, you can you kill some in a cornfield? Of course you can. But you know, like at this spot that we hunt, that's 1,800 acres of WRP. It's got some permanent ponds in it. And you can go sit on those ponds whenever ducks are going everywhere else. And if you sit on those ponds, you'll kill you 6 gadwalls because they're coming in there after the coontail and the azolla fern and the stuff like that. They're not out there. They don't have a real big appetite for more soil plants. I mean, really and truly, they just, you know, they like eating aquatic vegetation. But they will eat other stuff. They're, you know, they're kind of the, you know, Swiss Army knife of ducks, I guess you could call them. They'll do a little bit of everything, but they prefer, you know, aquatic vegetation. So, and I don't know if it's actually eating the coontails or all the stuff that lives in coontail. You know, you pick up a big mat of coontail and that thing is absolutely alive. So, you know, I like to think of them kind of like me. I love shrimp and them things are generally full of grass shrimp. So they may just be in there eating shrimp. Who knows, you know, but... but them things, you know, they do concern me when I see that, because to me, that I see is potentially a bigger issue up and down the flyway of old residual cypress breaks and, you know, just flooded lowlands that are, you know, for lack of a better term, are generally like semi-permanent wetlands is what I would call them. They keep water in them most of the year. So, to grow that aquatic vegetation. So I do find that mildly concerning when I look at everything from the year, you know.
I think, Martin, I think one of the biggest misconceptions about, we'll talk about this for a second. We'll close out with this point, and we'll jump back into the story next week because everybody wants to hear your thoughts on this. I think one of the biggest misconceptions about corn is, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of times, not going to say all the time, waterfowl will only use corn when they need to get a fire in their belly. Cold's coming. More times than not, I've seen it here in Mississippi, waterfowl using corn as almost like the buck brush of the old days, as a shelter,
mm-hmm.
hide out in. They feel safe. Right or wrong about that? Well, ducks eat.
I think.
Well, they feed on corn, you know, when it's 70 degrees.
I think that they, to say that they won't, I think is too absolute of a statement. But
right.
No, they prefer to, when they're not, you know, they know what they need to survive. So when it warms up and instinctively in them, they're like, oh, I've got to get preparing for this trip back north. It's, you know, now, okay, maybe the calendar's turning. I mean, they don't have a watch like we do. They just, they know general weather trends or triggers for them to go do what they need to do. So when that happens, they know to go to moist soil and to other avenues to get the invertebrates that they need for calcium and everything else for egg production and for molting of feathers and everything else that's going to be coming their way. But you're exactly right. A cornfield gives them excellent overhead cover from probably the number one predator on them, which is birds of prey. It's the same reason, you know, I've tried to figure it out for years why when you clean ducks, and I do this, and what I'll do is if it's a really good migration or something, you know, is happening, I'll take the gizzards out and cut their gizzards open and see what they've been eating or try to diagnose what they've been eating. And I would kill all these ducks in coffee bean fields and stuff like that, but I would never or hardly ever find a coffee bean seed in them. Well, that's because they're using the coffee bean as overhead cover. An eagle or a hawk or anything else, it's hard to get down through there without a duck being able to get away from them. You know, so these ducks are pretty slick when it comes to that. They like getting stuff over the top of their head, just like I like having stuff over the top of my head when I'm trying to hunt them, you know. I like having overhead cover just because it helps. It helps you hide. So when you start thinking of a duck as thinking like a hunter, like he needs concealment, he needs food, you know, just like everything else, you start realizing that this stuff that provides good overhead cover is kind of a good thing for them. So, no, I think you're absolutely right. The further south it comes, corn corn is more so your button willows, because those areas have been tilled up or drained or whatever else, and it just gives them a good something over their head to hide out from other stuff from, you know.
Hey, before we close out today, I want everybody to know that's listening to this podcast. Martin and I were talking about this before we hit the record button. A shared friend of mine and Martin's is Tony Vandemore. And what's so funny about this, Tony has become like the punching bag for a lot of people for being a great marketer. He is a great marketer. His wife, Kate, is unbelievable at marketing. But mm-hmm. he's become the punching bag for so many wrong reasons. And what kind of brought this up in Martin and I's conversation was, Tony sent me a screenshot. Yes, it was either last summer, last spring, somewhere in there. He and I were texting, and we were talking about him being the punching bag for people in the South. And he said, "Man, look, as soon as the season ends up here, I pull my boards. I send them south." And another misconception about Tony is the habitat that he's using on his place. Yes, he does have a little bit of flooded corn, but a lot of the stuff that he's doing now is moist soil, because he knows what these ducks need, and that's protein. Oh, yeah. They need to build their muscle back up once they get to him. And, it's like I said, it's crazy because, you know, I was telling Martin that he had sent me a screenshot of a text between Martin and him. I guess it was last January, and you had said, "Man, send them south." And he said, "Yep, just pull the boards. They're on their way."
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he sends me videos of the boards coming out. So, you know, everybody can say, "Oh, he's just telling you that." No, I got the video evidence if you just got to see it. I mean, as long as I haven't deleted the messages. No, he's like, "Well, here they come, boys." And he'll go take about three boards off of it. And, you know, I'm like, "Heck yeah." Of course, it don't ever really have a change for us, it don't seem like. But, you know, but at least it makes me feel better, you know. And I text him all throughout the season, man. And
look, y'all are habitat gurus.
We love it. And look, there ain't nobody rooting harder for Tony Vandemore than me, and there ain't nobody rooting harder for Duck Commander than Tony Vandemore. We're friends. And look, I'll say this. This is one thing I was going to tell y'all about SHOT Show. I sat down for 30 minutes with Jim Rundquist, and we just talked like, you know, because we hadn't seen each other in a while, and, you know, we stay busy during the season, so we don't get to text as much as we normally do, and we just sat there and talked, and there's this big misconception that if you're a Duck Commander guy, you can't be an R&T guy, and if you're an R&T guy, you can't be an Echo guy, and blah, 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 blah. Here's what I tell y'all, in case y'all didn't know, we're all friends, every last one of us. I saw Spencer. I tried to get to Spencer over there in the Benelli booth, and then I got pulled one way to do a product video, and then by the time I got done with that, I look up and he's gone, and then I shot him a message and said, "Hey man, I saw you over there. I tried to get to you, but you know," he said, "Oh man, I get it. It's work. You know, we here doing the same thing." So, you know, we're all friends and we all are on the same team, and that's to grow this duck hunting community, you know, and it don't matter what camouflage we wear. It don't matter what shotguns we shoot. It don't matter what boats we use or shells or anything like that. And if the general public could get on the same team as the rest of us, then we'd be a pretty good force to be reckoned with, you know. But the problem is, for whatever reason, there's got to be division amongst the ranks. And, you know, I'm here to preach a message of community as a duck hunter. We all need to be telling the same story. And that's that this crap is fun and that we need more people doing it. And, you know, that's one of the things that I just hope doesn't get lost on everybody. Are we competitors? Of course we're competitors at retail. But outside of retail, we're friends. Every last one of us. I spent the last weekend, closing weekend season, with Rod Haydale. You don't think we ain't competitors? We got the same price point, everything, and we love each other. And we had a blast. Them Haydales, I shot ducks that were caught in with the Haydales, and he shot ducks that were called in with a Duck Commander. It was pretty daggum fun, if I got to be honest with you. So, you know, that's and if we can do that as people in general, then we're all better off. You know, that's kind of my closing thoughts on all of this as we're going into what's going to seem like a forever off season because of an overall poor season. Is is let's just get together, man, and let's work together to figure out what these problems may be, and let's come together and figure out a solution that is actually feasible. There's no reason to get to a solution that can't be done. Let's start knocking off the little things that can hopefully lead up to a big thing, where that the people in North Dakota kill them, South Dakota, all the way to Louisiana, we all kill ducks and have a great time, and let's figure out how to do that.
Grow the sport.
I mean,
gosh, that's in time
golly.
When we need it.
Amen. I mean, there ain't nobody happier than me when people all up and down the flyway are killing them. I love it. I love sitting there. Like on the last weekend, I shot like two bullets. I killed a hen woody on the last day of season, and I was at peace with the season. And I just stood there by them trees, and every time I'd hear boom, 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 a smile came to my face. I was like, yep, there's people enjoying it right there. A lot of times I'm like, golly, I wish I was them. But, you know, you stop and you change your perspective, and it's like, man, this is awesome. So that's kind of my parting shot for this one. And, you know, people that get into this and listen to it, look, when you post the link, if you got anything else you want me to address, post it up under there. I'll either come to that or we'll cover it next week on the deal. But I just ask that you be respectful if you disagree, because I'm going to be respectful to you. So, you know, and let's figure it out. Let's talk this thing out. You know, that's my deal. Let's everybody talk it out and figure out what we can come to and actually pull off goals that we can achieve. So, you know.
It's funny to me, though, Martin, that one outfitter in Northwest Missouri can hold up the whole migration from the Mississippi Flyway.
Oh, has done shut her down. Has got ducks acting tame again. Has got, you know, like, what the heck, man? Golly. You know, break out the tinfoil hats on that deal. Like, what else you got? I mean, that's a weird one there. So,
Listen, while Tony's holding up the, you know, it's funny. Tony's holding up the migration, and you're bringing people into the sport that don't need to be here.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Conspiracies that we have in duck hunt.
Oh, I guarantee you. I mean, it's like, you know, ooh, man, you want to talk about a bunch, man. But I guess that's what makes us all unique, you know. Us duck hunters are a different breed, that's for sure.
Oh man.
You know, but one of us is killing it, and the other one, one of us is killing it because they're stopping it. One of us is killing it because we're growing it. And, you know, if it were up to them, there'd be about seven people in the whole country that duck hunted. And boy, they'd really have a voice in. So, you know.
I can't think of better examples of people to follow than you guys. And I'm not saying that. I say it on whenever I catch people even mentioning that. You know, that's the first thing that I say. I can't think of better examples that I would want if I weren't around, something happened to me, to look up to. They wanted to duck hunt. And that's you guys.
Man, so, yeah, we just guys that love Jesus and love each other, man. Golly, let's all have fun. You know, life's too short to be negative. Golly, just smile and have fun. Think, you know, it took me about halfway through the season. I had to have a change of perspective. And I think a lot of it was a good Lord, you know. Hey, quit focusing on the creation and focus on the Creator, man. You know, get off your little high horse. This ain't about you, you know. And once I did that, killing 6, 7, 8 ducks a morning became fun again, rather than miserable, you know. So, you know, and that was a big slice of humble pie for me to swallow. I ain't going to lie now.
hey, Martin, next week, let's do this. We'll jump back into the story, but I want to ask you about this. Why did duck hunting ever become about a number? Is it a stage? Let's talk about that in the opening, you know, because it comes, you know, it goes back to what you just said. And too many times we catch ourselves focusing on a number. We'll talk about that in the opening next week. Think on it for a week. Talk about it next week. But Martin, hey man, thank you again. Enjoyed it. I'm sorry we didn't get back into the story, but I think it was worth it to dive off into some of this, because like I said, so many people want to hear what you have to say.
Mm-hmm. So, well, and I encourage them too. Yeah, I'm here. I'm an open book, and you know, I encourage them to get involved after they listen to it, to post something out there and let's talk, or let's create a forum for discussion on this thing, you know, or let's do something. Let's talk this thing out. You know, I think that's the best. I think an open and honest dialogue is a way that we can actually get something done as hunters. So, you know, don't sit there and growl at us. Speak up, be respectful, and let's figure out what we can do.
Yeah, for the betterment of us all.
Yeah.
Martin, thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckDuckDuckDuck.